ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
As a top-tier research university, UW-Milwaukee has hundreds of faculty members working every day to make discoveries in their field of study. When there is a breakthrough and new ideas or new compounds, even new products emerge, it's often the end result of years and years of careful, painstaking work. But it is not the end of the journey that many scientists and researchers take on the road to their discoveries. On this edition of UWM Today, we have the fascinating story of how two UWM researchers, physicists, are turning into entrepreneurs because of their scientific discovery. Joining us in the studio are Maria Gajdarzyska, the Dean of UWM's Graduate School and Professor of Physics, and Carol Hirschmugel, also a physics professor in the College of Letters and Science. Welcome to both of you, ladies. Great to have you in the studio. And you have such an interesting story. I think our listeners are really going to enjoy as they hear about your journey from discovery into business. But let's first talk about that discovery. Carol, what is it that that you and Maria have come upon in the work in your laboratories?
First of all, let me thank you, Tom, for the opportunity to speak with you today. Discovery. I was always interested in materials and how materials interact with their outside world and so on. And through using tools that we have in physics, we're able to look at the structures of materials. And because we have learned a lot along the way, we were equipped to see something new and different when we did an experiment about 7 years ago now. And as we were doing an experiment about 7 years ago, we saw signs of a different material, a new material that is a solid carbon monoxide material.
And were you looking for this?
We weren't looking for this. We simply we were actually looking to try and understand how to modify a commercially available material into graphene, which is this single layer of carbon that got the Nobel Prize in 2009. We were looking to try and do something along those lines, and then through experiments. Discovered something new, and that is this discovery of this material, graphene monoxide.
And Maria, you were the partner in this process of discovery. Had you ever worked with graphene before? Had you ever said, there may be something else that the world doesn't know about?
Well, I had promised to my PhD advisor that I will spend my life working on oxides because on our planet, everything in the end binds with oxygen and becomes an oxide. And so carbon was not my original focus of study, but this new starting material that people were calling graphene oxide was like, okay, there is oxygen in there. I'm going to start looking. And by doing something very different, both Carol and I have been pioneers in instrumentation and methods in our respective areas. I use electrons. She uses infrared light. And very often, the way materials are done, you cook, then you look, right? So you do everything in your synthesis, and then afterwards you try and see what did you make. So I've been at the forefront of this new way of looking while you're cooking. And because we did this inside a microscope, we were able to see something new and to arrest it. It would not have been ever discovered in the normal way of making new materials. And so after having this new way of discovering a material, we then figured out how can you reproducibly make it. And then Carol spent a lot of time to figure out how can you make it in larger quantities so you can start to apply it towards potential product.
You didn't have any idea at the time that you discovered this of what potential uses it might have, did you?
Not at all. It was complete. It was, we had no idea.
So at that moment when you said, Maria, look at this. You know, I think we have something different here. Was it, did it feel like an aha moment, an epiphany? Or was it, oh, yeah, this is unusual?
I think there was a gradation. At first, it was like, oh, that's interesting. And then it was a lot of learning and starting to figure out what's happening in the world and seeing how it fit into the picture of many different things. And then as we wrote a patent, so this all became a patent that we applied for. When we were writing that patent, then we started to realize all the applications that this could apply to.
You know, for the average
process,
for the average person, our listeners perhaps who hear the story of that discovery, I suspect they're a lot like me when you begin to think of that process, what that event must have been like, and I wouldn't know where to begin. You know, how did you know that nobody found this compound before?
Well, you have a eureka moment, right? And the eureka moment is either because you're pursuing something for a long time and you finally say, aha, or because you're pursuing something and something else shows up and you say, aha. And the biggest question in the beginning is, do I continue along the line of work that I was doing and just ignore this new thing that I just discovered? Or do I say, this is really new. I need to pay attention to this and try and figure out what it is. So this is like the two different kinds of eurekas. And because of the Nobel Prize, we started to do this work right before the Nobel Prize. And then the Nobel Prize given to graphene, which is this single layer of your pencil as you're writing. That's what graphene is. And we came up with this graphene monoxide, which is also a two-dimensional crystal, in a field that had become so red hot that the literature, the public science journals, everybody was writing about graphene. And so we ended up discovering graphene monoxide. And on top of it, our material is a semiconductor, while graphene is the best metal on the planet. It's better than gold. And so if you're going to have future electronics, right, you have a metal, that thing we started with is the ceramic or the insulator, and we discovered the semiconductor. And so, you know, when UWM announced the discovery, there was so much viral activity on the internet. The National Science Foundation announced the discovery again. So we kind of knew we had something really important. And, you know, we kind of knew it, but the world told us that as well.
That's really interesting. Your note about headed in one direction with your research and then this event happens, and you almost, was it hard to take that detour to say, I guess we're going to get off the road here and take that side road because that looks maybe more interesting?
Yeah. I mean, so we did pursue both roads in parallel. We couldn't just jump off of one road. We had to kind of figure out how to spend the resources and proceed. Things such as the Catalyst Grant at the university and so on were instrumental in giving us opportunity to continue on that road that was not the perceived road.
So you have you've discovered this new compound. Now are on this next journey of discovery of what do we do with it? And that's where the story, I think, gets really, really interesting. Carol, from your standpoint, you mentioned the patent, but it's not just patenting this material. It's figuring out how can it be used.
Yeah. So when we applied for the patent, working with the UWM Research Foundation, they said, well, you know, we'll try and get it licensed for you now. You know, you're out there, you know. And this material is new. No one really knows what it does, and it wasn't. We thought people would just come to our doorstep and say, "We want to license this material from you," and that wasn't happening. And when we got the patent, we said, "Well, if someone else isn't going to come and ask us for it, we're going to have to go out there and sell it ourselves." And through that process, we learned from Brian Thompson at the UWM Research Foundation about a program called ICOR, which is a program that he does a local site for. And I approached Maria and I said, Maria, we're going to go do ICOR and learn how to sell this stuff.
ICOR, and we actually have talked about that program here on UWM Today before. It's a National Science Foundation funded initiative that's designed actually with people just like you in mind, right? Scientists, researchers around the country who have discoveries but aren't quite sure how to commercialize that or see if it is commercializable or not. So you've been on this journey of asking what people... Can you use this stuff? We've got this really cool compound. What does it do? I mean, is that literally what you've had to do to go out and beat the street to see whether or not there's a market or an appetite for this?
Oh, yes, Tom. So ICOR is Innovation Core. That's the abbreviation. It really is designed for people in academia to learn how to commercialize discoveries that happen in research. Especially at the research-intensive universities like the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. And it is a whole method. It's called Lean Launchpad. It's a way of starting a business or of starting to develop a product. And it teaches you about a new way of coming up with a business plan. The most important part of all that is to leave your building and talk to the real people who would be your customers. And actually not go and sell to them, but go and ask them and listen, what are their pains? What are their wishes for gains? And then try and figure out whether what you have solves some of their major pains. I mean, minor pains, yeah, people live with those. And also, can you fulfill some of their wildest dreams of things that are not a pain, but you need to always go bigger, better, faster. The world needs, of course, technology. And in our case, we decided that energy was going to be the first application. In our patent, we have the material covered for applications in electronics, for applications in sensors, and for applications in batteries. And through the interviews, we zoomed in on batteries as the first market where we're going.
And you traveled around the country talking to people, what, in other research labs or other government agencies, businesses, all of that?
Mostly companies. They really don't want you talking to people in other research labs and so on. They really want you talking to who's going to buy your material.
And what did you
really
find
need
out?
To be talking to customers.
So you walked in and you conducted these interviews. Was that a comfortable place for a physicist to be?
Not a comfortable place. This really took us all out of our comfort zones, but in a good way. And really, it did help us to provide the opportunity to listen to a lot of really smart people in the community and learn about what's important to them. We learned a lot about listening.
So what did they tell you about what they thought of your discovery?
Key, you can't tell them about the discovery to start with.
Oh, you can't?
No.
So this is like 20 questions, you know? You so it's almost like a blind interview or study so that you can't deliver the punchline.
Right. You don't deliver the punchline. You can kind of reveal it at the very end of the interview. But they really try to discourage you from ever mentioning it early on because you don't want to sway the person who you're interviewing to say that your product is great before, you know, you want an honest assessment of what the field really is before you tell them about your own field.
Because otherwise they could look at you and say, these are two nice people. I don't want to hurt their feelings.
Precisely.
Can I tell you something? We all had to read the book called The Mom Test. And so this is a way of interviewing even your own mother and getting useful information about the product that your mother uses and that you maybe are thinking of going to that direction. Because if you tell your mom, Mom, I discovered this. I want to start a business. What do you think? Your mom will say, sure, honey, go on. You have my full support. And so this is kind of the paradigm of saying, if you go in and say what you have, people will want to, you know, be nice to you, and that's not how you learn.
I've heard both of you present the part of the story that we're sharing with listeners today to other audiences, and you have both used a great line that I'd like you to share with our audience about how you felt during your own evolution as a scientist out into the laboratory.
So we were trying to include some levity in our very final slide for the first ICOR presentation, and we said that ICOR converts physicists into capitalists, and then the whole group loved it so much that our research foundation is using this as a quote of what ICOR does, converts academics into capitalists.
It's a great story of, again, taking what some people might say as scholarly, esoteric work in the bowels of the research laboratories and making it real, something that the average person can get when they try to understand why it's so important for universities to do academic research, right?
Yes, yes. It's an eye-opening experience as an academic. As an academic, I have been trained in presenting at conferences to trained people and so on, and not thinking about, well, how could this be a product that someone could use that would be useful in everyday life and so on. And so this is a real big shift, and it's been great. It's been a great adventure.
We're going to talk more about that adventure in a moment, but I want to remind our listeners, they're listening to UWM Today right here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. In the studio with us, Maria Gajdarzyska, who's the dean of UWM's graduate school, and Carol Hirschmugel. Both are professors of physics, and both have patented a discovery, the development of a new formula related to graphene, the stuff that we see at the end of our pencil, right? Making it really, really simple. I'm already over my head here. Maria's looking at me, Carol saying, yes, you don't have a clue. And I don't, but you've done a great job of sharing the story of how you've come upon this discovery of a new compound and how it might lead to something that could make better products. I want to talk a little bit later in the program about where you ultimately see applications for this product. But first, let's talk a bit more about your journey, your study. How did the two of you find yourself in the field of physics to begin with? It's a field that has, for many years, been dominated by men, isn't it? And what a delight that we have two people, performing at such a high level at UWM, and both of them females. Has it been an easy journey for you,
Carol?
Okay, I'll start. I had no idea what I was going to do when I started college. I was actually going to be a professional banjo player.
I love it. I'd never heard that. I didn't see that coming.
And interestingly, I started at a community college
Wow.
in the State University of New York system and moved on to Stony Brook University and got my bachelor's degree at Stony Brook and wound up working at the local national lab, at Brookhaven National Lab locally. And then moved on to Yale University, got a PhD in physics at Yale University. I never, ever had my wildest dreams that this would be what I was doing as a child.
Wow. Were you good at science?
I was good at math and science, but I just didn't have that as a trajectory. I didn't have role models. I didn't have anything that said this is what to do. So it was really just following my passion when I went to college, taking the courses I enjoyed taking, and finding I started as an engineer and decided I really enjoyed the physics much more, and so continued with the physics program.
How about you, Maria? What was your life's journey to where you are today?
Well, I mentioned to you once, I loved rock music. And when I heard the Bohemian Rhapsody, that was the music for me. So we have the music, yes,
right?
the music connection. And I looked up what the band members were doing, and their lead guitar player was doing his PhD in physics. And I was like, okay, this is very interesting. I already was interested in physics, but this is kind of the joke in my family that the group Queen is responsible for me being in physics. I think there is a bit of so with one of my colleagues during the graduate studies in Arizona, I jumped around. I did my bachelor's in Macedonia, at that time former Yugoslavia. I did my undergraduate research experience in Grenoble, France. That really hooked me on real physics because you're doing real research. And I did my master's at the University of Sydney in Australia and my PhD at Arizona State University and postdoc there. And I came here to Milwaukee in 1993 to be the first woman on the faculty of the physics department. And Carol was our second one. And now we're four of us tenured. And that's still far from 50-50, no parity. But in the same time, we are really a trailblazer for physics departments and have a very welcoming environment for our diverse student body.
Well, again, what a great story, the path that you took. Did you ever, either of you ever imagine you'd end up here in Milwaukee and why at UWM?
You want to start?
I can start that. So yeah. I came to UWM to an international conference when I was a graduate student to present some really new breakthrough results. The conference was supposed to be in Beijing and Tiananmen happened. And it's one of those conferences like the Olympics every 4 years. And Milwaukee was such a big place for this area in science called surface science. It's an interdisciplinary area with physicists, chemists, engineers. A lot of very important things happen at surfaces of materials. And so Milwaukee was so big that it was able to host the conference at a very short notice. So that was my first exposure to UWM coming to this international conference. And later on, I continued to meet the faculty at various international and national conferences. And when there was an opening, I got a phone call and they said, Maria, we have a faculty position. Why did you not apply? And I said, but you guys don't have an electron microscope. Why should I apply? And they said, well, if you apply, maybe we will get an electron microscope. And that's what happened.
Great story. And Carol?
Okay, so for me, I was actually in Germany at the time. I had an Alexander von Humboldt fellowship, and I was working at the Fritz Haber Institute, which is a very high-profile international facility in Germany, in Berlin. And I was applying to all of the universities in the U.S. to come back and be a professor. And I had about seven interviews in the space of 4 weeks. And then at the end of that time, I heard from UW-Milwaukee that they were interested in interviewing me. And so I extended my visit for another week so I could tack that interview on and went through the interview process here. And again, it was the Laboratory for Surface Studies that drew me here. The grandfather of my field of expertise is Professor Greenler. You may remember him, a very high-profile science bag
at UWM for
many,
many years.
Right? Yeah. And so he was the grandfather of my field. And so it was just this coming to the Mecca for me to come here.
And how serendipitous both of you came together. And then layer on that the fact that you began working together. Does the fact that you are women make a difference in terms of how you teach or how you present to students, particularly other women in the classroom? Do you see yourselves as role models?
Absolutely. I have taken to heart really being very aware of how my students learn. And I've done a lot of work actually with our Center for Educational Training and Learning to make sure that I'm making a very approachable classroom experience for all of my students. And that's been really rewarding for me, that I actually really know that they're actually learning something. And I'm really making it important that they understand how to work with one another, because especially in physics, probably so for other fields, it's really important that you're able to talk about what you're learning to your colleagues, because you internalize it so much more. And so I really facilitate that environment both in the classroom and outside the classroom. And it's really hard for a minority in a classroom to do that if it's not facilitated in a careful way. So I take that really, really importantly.
Great stories on the background. We have just a few minutes left, and I do want to come back to where we began today's interview, which is discussing your discovery. So you've been on this road show, I guess, talking to people around the country. Can you use this? What happens next? You've got this product patented. Do you see customers out there? Is there a demand for what you're doing?
Yes, there is a demand for what we're doing. We have identified lithium ion batteries as our first market. It's a very, very large market. What was the number, Carol?
$42 billion in 2020. For the active anodes within the
wow,
market.
And
yeah.
So there is a search for new material for the anode, which is, you know, when you're putting your battery, you always have to pay attention to the plus and the minus.
Yep, positive, so, negative.
Yes, so that's we are working on one of those signs, and that part has been since the beginning of lithium ion batteries until now, really the material that is in your pencil, graphite, and that was perfect. But now there has been, because the other part of the battery were the weak parts. There has been a lot of research that have promoted the rest of the components of a battery, and now the part that is the pencil is becoming to the limiting part, and that's what we can do. Our material from the lab tests that we have done so far can store more lithium. Can and release it, can do it much faster. So if you're thinking about charging your battery, can be much, much faster. If you're thinking about power tools, like in some of the companies or cars, you need to be able to release the lithium fast. So that's the other part. And safety is important for us, which is why we called our company Safely, like safe lithium. We believe that we can deliver all of that and in a much safer way.
Wow, what an ambitious endeavor on your part. And again, you're just at the beginning of that journey into the business world now, right?
So we are.
you've got many more steps to go, but it sounds like it's very, very promising. Well, we are going to have you back on the program as we follow your journey. I think our listeners would love to hear how this aha moment 7 years ago has now led you to the cusp of perhaps developing a big business in a very, very big market, as you said, $42 billion a year. Thank you so much for sharing the background of how physicists can become capitalists, right?
Thank you, Tom.
Maria Gajdorzyska, UWM's Dean of the Graduate School, and Kara Hirschmugel, both professors of physics at UWM's College of Letters and Science, are guests on this edition of UWM Today with their fascinating story. That's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.